This is Cave Scott Allen of OTCO.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Kuhn from LazyCoder.com.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Herding Code, recorded on September 1st, 2010. Tonight, we are talking about some funny stuff, but before I go further, I have to remember to say that we have a Twilio-powered phone call thing where you can call in and leave comments and questions, and it's audio, and we can play them back on shows, and that's 877-394-1632. I think it's a two-minute time limit, so call and say hi. So, but tonight, I had a funny story that I thought I would share with you guys. So, it's September. We're still waiting on our tax return. And I've been calling the IRS every, you know, like lately, every few weeks and just saying like, what's up? And I would get like wildly different stories from the people every time. And they would like, I would hear some typing and then they would say, hold on a second, I got to go look this up. And then they would be, I would be on hold for like 10 more minutes. And then they'd come back and be like, yeah, this is weird. I'm checking some other stuff. I'll be back. So, I mean, it really wasn't an interruption on my day other than the hold music was kind of boring, but I would just, you know, keep working and sit on hold well. And so finally, things were sounding weird enough. I just went to the local IRS office and they looked it up, and the problem is that according to the U.S. government, I'm 13 years old, and those who have met me know that I'm not quite 13 years old. according to my Social Security records, I was born in 1997, and what was funny was, you know, I was like, okay, well, can you pull up, you know, I'm worried that other things are messed up. And said, oh no, here it shows, you know, you've been paying taxes, you know, it showed my taxes going back into my teenage years. And, you know, it showed, you know, like all kinds of other records, Social Security records and stuff. I'm like, okay, well, I had gotten enough weirdness about my age and stuff from these other calls I'd had that I brought my passport and a bunch of other documents with me. And they're like, well, sorry, this is all controlled by Social Security. They're the ones who provide us this information. And I said, well, you know, how did that just get screwed up this year? And they said, actually, it's been screwed up since 1997, and people have just been going in and fixing it. I said, well, could you do that for me today? And they said, no, we have a new policy where we don't just do that anymore. So you actually have to get this fixed. So then yesterday I went to Social Security, sat, looked at their records. Of course, it's a green screen, and, you know, they have no real information about why anything was changed, just that in 1997 someone went in and updated my Social Security record to change my birth date to zero. so, which is awesome. My kids think it's hilarious because I'm only a few years older than they are now. And then Sarah Chip.
Are they telling you to go to, you know, yeah, go clean your room?
That's right. Sarah Chip's recommended.
Giving you timeouts.
Right, right. Sarah Chip's recommended that I turn my wife in as a sex offender. And then someone else recommended that she could at least claim me as a dependent. So there's all kinds of interesting implications. I'm wondering, too, if I really need to even worry about my taxes anymore as a 13-year-old. so I'm like, you know, if this is this much of a pain, maybe I'll just leave it and you know, relive my teenage years. Although I may be eligible for the draft again. There's all kinds of implications here. But I think.
Well, but technically, wouldn't you could probably prove that you'd already served 12.
That's actually, I was negative years old. I actually was a got out of the Navy as a submarine lieutenant in 97. So
there you go.
Yeah. Yeah. So
you came out fully formed at 97 and then retired from the Navy.
Yeah. So
the problem is they may come find you as truant from your school.
That's right. That's right. All kinds of crazy implications. So I was thinking, which is like, number one, this is all caused by a software glitch. There's all kinds of data inconsistencies here. And so, well, this is all kind of a funny and interesting story that could play out for a while. I still have to get notarized copies of my birth certificate, try and convince Social Security, then get them to convince the IRS, and who knows what else this is screwed up. So that's all like interesting, but then it got me thinking, like, what does this mean in terms of software development? And like, we spend all this time talking about the way software development should be, and I'm wondering, like, what are some obvious things that could be done better that would have fixed this and that sort of stuff. Maybe that's getting too deep. Like, for instance, shouldn't there be like data consistency checks? Side note, is that a retarded angle to go in? Should we just tell funny stories?
No, I don't think it's a retarded angle.
Well, like, I'm wondering, there's that, there's identity management. There's all kinds of crazy things about like identity management. And in the end, it's all going to come down to me like faxing a copy of a birth certificate that could, you know, I don't know. It's just, it's interesting to me thinking about, I guess this is mostly a data problem. There's a process, there's some process weirdnesses.
But they were able to tell that someone actually changed your record in 1997.
They could tell what was changed and what city the change was made from, but that was about it. They couldn't tell any reason. It's possible that my social security was reissued to someone else, although it still shows the same parents, the same everything else. So it looks like someone edited my information. And that does bring up, you know, I don't know if there's a possibility of like identity theft. I'm checking on that too. I talked to them enough and they said, yeah, we'll do an investigation on that. But so that's interesting. Like, shouldn't that be immutable?
Seems odd. Now it's not really a funny story.
No, it's getting worse. Shouldn't that be immutable? Shouldn't like the birth date? Well, I mean, I guess maybe you make corrections.
We should all have GWIDs instead of just these. What are they?
I should have a GWID.
Nine-digit numbers.
Yeah. And the other.
Should we get a barcode tattoo born so that they can just read us?
There's all kinds of other crazy things, too, about Social Security. Like, they treat it as a password in a lot of places, but it's also a matter of public record in a lot of cases. Like, if you've bought or sold a house or, you know, registered a business, or if, like, there's public records that have your Social Security on it.
It does seem like this is an area where auditing seems like it should be a key functional requirement of their system. You know, like it should have an audit log of every change that was made and who made it and maybe why it was made.
You know, that definitely is something I was thinking about, is the whole auditing and how they'll trust like a piece of paper over data. And then if the data is not trustworthy, why isn't it trustworthy? And another thing I was thinking is consistency checks. Like if they have records that show that I was paying into Social Security before my birth date, shouldn't that be like caught, you know, like, and you know what I mean? Shouldn't there be like, maybe that's if you're doing an update to a record to change birth date to before the first pay date, like, wouldn't you want to catch that? And then you say, well, that's kind of esoteric, but I'm certain I'm not the first person this has happened to. So maybe that's something where there should be a test for that. And then, you know, maybe it's not a unit test, but like an occasional, like a monthly data consistency check to just check for some of these common cases. I guess it gets more confusing when there's like millions of people, you know, that you got to worry about. But yeah. Well,
see, most of my funny stories aren't about glitches. They're about things that were purposely designed to be weird, or things where they didn't take anything into consideration. Like we used to collect medical data from a lab, and at one point they had a column called abnormal. And for a while, all the values in there were just Y or N. So either yes, it was abnormal, or no, it wasn't. And then at some point they changed to H and L. And then somebody decided they were going to put other values in there, like less than 3 or greater than 0.2. But they didn't put in like what was supposed to be normal. So we just had to assume that for whatever, you know, test that was that was run for that particular row, that 0.3 was abnormal for whatever normal was. And it was interesting to try to build reports off of that. Someone else would just come along and say, we need to change the way this data is stored. And they wouldn't like go back and retrofit anything. They just started putting new values in.
Oh, I love medical databases.
It had a very pointy-haired boss feel to it. Like, the new directive is that instead of Y or N for abnormal, we will put H or L to indicate whether it was high or low.
But in that case, when I've had to deal with that stuff in the past, you'd update the previous data so that it's still consistent. Or you at least try to do that.
But I guess that was hard.
Yeah. Or just add
so,
a new
column. Trying to build a report off of that where they're saying, you know, show me all of the very easy ones where show me all the labs where this was abnormal are easy. But it was things like show me the labs where, you know, this value, the result of the lab was higher or lower than this set, you know, level. which was, you know, you could spend a lot of time converting all these text fields to numeric to do comparisons.
Yeah.
So like the first pass through was just get anything where abnormal was something other than null. Those are the ones we care about. Now start iterating over that set. Show me all the things that have, you know, Y or N's, and then start looking at the result column and compare to this. It took a while to build reports off of that.
So actually, guys, while we've been on the call, I just got a call from my from the IRS investigator that's assigned to this case.
So from the IRS?
Yes, it's and so I really kind of need to take this. So I'll just put you guys on hold. So, excuse me, are you on?
Yeah, I'm looking for little Johnny Galloway.
Yeah, actually, it's past my bedtime.
John, can you put your mom on?
So actually this is Sergeant Connery, is it not?
Yes. Yes, it is. How are you?
I'm great. So you had a funny story that you were telling
so
me.
You just got to leave. Oh. No, I thought you were leaving. You're not leaving now?
Me? Confused. Yes. Thanks for calling. Are you talking to me or John? I've got to go.
I thought John was leaving. He just said he was going to leave.
I was joking.
And now he's not. He said he had to put us on hold to take a call from somebody who was garbled by internet traffic. And no, I'm not running anything in the background.
Let me ask again, though. Are you running the Apple software updater?
No, I clicked stop. So I cannot ping people and tell them that I'm listening to Lady Gaga now.
If only there were 5,000 other services that would let you tell everyone else in the world what you're listening to.
See, if you're running the Apple updater on the approved Apple protocol for the download, that would be much faster without a problem.
Mm.
That's all I have is the approved Apple protocol because I don't have any choice. I have a stop button and I have an install button on my dialog box.
So you had a funny story that you were telling me earlier.
Yes. So for my day job, I make videos. I do silly things on a computer and I try and splice them together happily. And I use a Macintosh. And it's interesting getting used to the Apple/Mac way of doing things. It's kind of funny. Everyone's used to the slick, beautiful Apple hardware. And they're really good at hardware. And people like their phones and their iPods and whatever. But the software that they make, it tends to be strange. I know some of you guys use a Mac. John, do you use a Mac at all?
I used to have access to one. I don't anymore right now.
One of the worst experiences as a Mac user is when you open up the Mac and you have to use the Finder. And you look at this thing and you're thinking, you know, what kind of like opium were they smoking? It's really hard to use. Anyway, blah, blah, blah. So I use the movie editor software sometimes. I'll use three or four things in conjunction, but I use the movie editor software, iMovie, to do all the splicing and production on, you know, for the main initial pass. And I was working with it one day and I was overdubbing a track and doing a few things, and all of a sudden an error message pops up. Now, Apple software is very strange in that for a lot of things, they don't actually have a save button. It just saves as you go in the background, like GarageBand. If you edit a podcast, same with iMovie. If you edit a movie, it'll just save it in the background. There is no save button. So I'm doing that, and all of a sudden this error message pops up, and it says, ran out of memory. This is the longest possible track that you can have on here, and you're going to have to delete a track. And I say, oh, blah, blah, beep, beep, son of a blah, blah, beep, beep, right? And then I can say, okay, fine, I'll do my thing. So I didn't know this, but not only does it tell you this on the messages, but it actually will delete the stuff for you. There's a long, boring explanation as to how this all happened. It had to do with collisions of planets and the world turning in on itself. But what ended up happening is that it managed to rearrange my audio tracks to the point where I didn't know that it did this, and it inserted me saying, oh, Jesus, blah, blah, ding, ding, bing, ding, me just swearing. It inserted it into the track, and I didn't know it. And it replaced an edit point that I had like 5 minutes down.
Oh, man.
And so,
what could go wrong?
Well, that's the funny thing, because when I'm done editing, I'm very meticulous. Like, I literally will edit 20, 30-second spots. I'll piece them together, and I'll go back, and I'll listen and make sure they flow together, and then I move on. And I'll proof it, but basically just sort of a once over, because I am so meticulous about each second of video that by the time I get to the end, I'm pretty sure that I've got it nailed. And then, but I'll go back, but I kind of go back just a few minutes. Anyway, this inserted the badness 3 or 4 minutes prior. It's the most bizarre bug I've ever encountered in my life.
Inserted it in a spot where you'd already edited, so there's no reason for you to go back to that.
Yeah, and it completely removed the audio that I had in there. I swear to you, it completely removed the audio I had in there before. And I know people listening to this are going, oh, whatever. I mean, software doesn't do that. It did it. And I'm like, anyway, so I pushed it live, which is the best part. I pushed it live. And like I do, I usually launch our videos late at night with sort of the feeling that, oh, you know, if anything goes wrong, there'll be some polite person out there. Well, the bad assumption about that is when I push it out at night here, the Europeans are listening to it. And, you know, my assumption about polite people listening to it is just goes out the window. I mean, it's the worst possible people you could push to initially. Because, I mean, you know, what are you doing? This is trash. So I had a very nice guy who, you know, sends me emails a lot, within 10 minutes sends me a support thing and says, you might want to check 23 minutes and 12 seconds in. There's a bit of an edit point. So I listened to it back and I just was chilled to the bone. I mean, I had pushed stuff out with not only a goofed edit and things kind of like looking crunchy in terms of video, but me swearing like I screwed up and I swore, you know, and that's just, you know, that freaked me out so badly. And of course, now I got to sit there, re-edit it, re-render it, re-push it, which took me an hour and a half into 3 a.m. And so there's my software story for you.
So some of the things we were talking about earlier were like, you know, we talk about all this ivory tower stuff. Here's how software should be built and stuff. So I've been trying to think about like, well, what are some things this stuff tells me about how the software should have been built differently? I don't know in that case if there's anything in there, but like it's corrupting data. I mean, I don't know.
Well, it seems like, you know, that some engineer along the line made a choice and said, well, we're going to have this convenience measure where we'll auto save. But in order to auto save, you sort of have to have a background queuing or caching or something where you just take the raw stuff and then you shuttle it over or I don't know what. But at some point, you're going to fill up whatever queue it is. And I mean, I have 2 terabytes of a hard drive, so I didn't fill up my hard drive. I just filled up whatever temporary thing it could handle. Mm-hmm. And then this is the trippy thing to me. It started wiping the track from somewhere in the middle. And I've seen this in GarageBand too. It happened to me when I was editing an audio file the other day where this narration was going down and then it removed the stuff from the very beginning, stuff that I had already put in. It took it right out. It was just so bizarre, but it accepted what I just did. And that's where I get, you know, really confused. I'm not sure why they would choose to do that, but they did.
Waiting till the end to see if Skype would cut out. I had another funny story about software gone wrong. But I think, Kay Scott, does anyone else have funny stories? No?
I had one that was kind of similar to your story in that it involved a data problem with a government entity. If you're interested in hearing it.
Who doesn't love data problems with government entities?
Yeah, so a couple years ago, I went and I bought a little red convertible, which I loved very much. And a lot of my friends said, hey, you're having a midlife crisis. And I said, no, I'm not. I just love driving with the top down and experiencing the earth and the wind and the sky and everything. And there's no better way to express your love for the environment than to drive a car that's small enough to be powered by batteries, but still has a big internal combustion engine in it. But I digress. So a few months after I buy this car, I get a letter from Canada that says something to the effect of, you are on the 407 toll road on such and such a day, and you never paid the toll, and so now we're charging you $35. And I'm looking at the letter, and it, you know, has my name, has my address, has my license plate number, and I'm thinking, this is crazy. I was nowhere near Canada on that day. This is some scheme by those communists in Canada just to scam Americans out of money and, you know, I don't know.
They're almost as bad as Europeans. Anyway, I'm sorry.
Almost.
Damn foreigners.
The Queen of England should just whip those people. Anyway, so I ignored it. Throw it in the trash. It's about 2 weeks after that when I get a letter from the state of Virginia that says my car was illegally parked at, I don't know, like Little Lily's House of Pancakes and Exotic Dancers or something like this. And my first thought was, wow, how intoxicated was I? But then I realized, no, I was not in Virginia on that date. So something weird is going on. Again, it had my name, had my license plate number on it. But I was nowhere near Virginia that day. But the kicker came. It was only just a couple days after that where I get a letter from the Department of Motor Vehicles of Washington, D.C. that actually has a photograph of my car speeding through a red light or going through a speed zone and over the speed limit. And I look at this photograph of my car and I see my license plate number on the car, but the car is this white PT Cruiser, which is nothing like the actual convertible that I have. And I would never drive a PT Cruiser, and I would never drive a white car. I mean, that's just boring. The only thing more boring than a white car would be a silver car. I mean, those people, you just don't even want to invite them to a party because they just stand in the corner.
Because they're FBI agents.
exactly. So at this point, I finally decided that I have a problem. And the first thing I did was actually was I called, because I do actually go into DC quite often, I called one of the numbers on that letter and said, because it had all this threatening language in it about, you know, if you enter the city, if you don't pay it by such and such a date and you're in the city, then we'll tow your car, whatever, blah, blah, blah. So I call them up and I get this wonderful lady. And of course, I explain to her that the car in this picture is not the car that I'm driving. And she's like, yes, or uh-huh. You know, she, I guess, hears something like that 10 times a day. And she tells me the only way to resolve this problem is to either appear in court or send some documentation along. So I actually wrote a letter to the DC Department of Motor Vehicles. I took a picture of my car, took a picture of my license plate, took a picture of me standing beside the car just to prove that it was not a white PT Cruiser, but it had no effect. Ultimately, the way I resolved this is I went to the Maryland Department of Motor Vehicles and I said, I've been getting notifications about all these problems, running red lights and speeding cameras and parked illegally, and it's not my car. So could you please, you know, look in that green screen computer that you have and see if there might be anything that's a little bit weird. So the lady starts typing, and sure enough, something is weird. And it turns out that my car and a car owned by Enterprise Rent-A-Cars both had the same registered license plate number in the system.
Whoa.
At which point she fixed things for me and gave me a new registration card and yada, yada, yada. But it was just kind of scary that there were actually two cars in there that had the same license plate number. I mean, it's not supposed to happen. Yeah. It's supposed to be
somebody forgot to put a unique constraint on that call.
Yeah, so I unloaded on this lady. I said, look, you give me an afternoon and I will rewrite this piece of COBOL crap using RIA services and light switch and I'll just charge you $1 billion.
Oh yeah.
And then she called security and things got worse.
So I've got a car story, but it's sort of partly my fault. Did I interrupt? We should talk more about your car story, maybe. Did you want
to? I guess you didn't like it. No.
No, it's a good story.
No, it's okay. I'll just sulk now. Turning off microphone.
Well, it just it reminded me of...
I'm not talking anymore.
Ouch. You just did.
Oh, sorry.
If you're going to sulk, would you do it quietly? Listen, here's my story. I was dropping off my wife at the airport. And you know how, like, there's no stopping except everyone stops, you know, and so I'm, like, letting her, you know, and, like, carrying her suitcase up. And this cop comes up, and I'm like, I'm moving, you know. And he's like, no, you're not. I'm like, what? And my wife's, like, waves and goes off to fly off and have a good time. And then I'm like, what? And he's like, give me your license and registration. I'm like, what? Hey, I'm sorry. I took, like, 30 seconds. And he's like, so basically it turned out that he's like, your registration is expired. I'm like, really? And he's like, look, your stickers. And sure enough, my stickers were like, I don't know, 9 months late or whatever, you know. And so I was like, that's weird. I mean, I pay it every time it comes in, you know, like, I you know. And so, you know, he, of course, being a friendly policeman, did not just give me a fix-it ticket or whatever. He actually impounded my car. Which was awesome. He was the biggest jerk ever, in my subjective opinion. So he, like, boots me out of my car, you know, and, like, tows the car, and it's in this impound lot until I can prove that I've paid my registration and stuff. So I go back and trace what happened. It turns out that I had on my registration, I got one of the things that said I had to get smog certificate. Does everyone have to do that? We do in California. You have to get, like, certified that it's not a polluting car or meet smog standards.
We do emissions tests, but we don't get a smog certificate because we don't have smog.
All right. Well, so it's part of the you know, every few years they'll make you get, you know, your registration or your smog check. So I'd done that, and it had been electronically sent in. And then at that point, they're supposed to send me the stickers. So I go to, DMV, and they're like, basically, I went in, the smog store was like, oh, yeah, we sent that off. The DMV says, yeah, if we got it, the record got lost. So I get all my stuff. I go in, and I talk to the guy at DMV, and I'm like, well, this is all the stuff that happened. And he's like, oh, yeah, that happens. I'm like, what do you mean? It's like, well, did this things just get sent to you, and you just lose them? And he's like, yeah. And he was just, you know, a guy that was maybe disgruntled enough where he was just, you know, telling the truth. And of course, on a green screen, common theme here. But so, and then I was like, well, I guess that happens, but then when that happens, don't you like send out a notification like, hey, we never got your smog, you never did this? And he's like, no. I was like, well, why am I having to deal with this? Well, he said, well, technically it's your responsibility to make sure your registration's in order. So from all that, it's like, I guess I should be going out and looking at the stickers on my car every, you know, once a month and making sure that they're, you know, up to date. But I was thinking, like, what are all the things that went wrong there? Like, number one, data just got lost and nobody cared. I mean, I guess, you know, there's possible, you know, if DMV didn't get the information, they wouldn't know. But the big thing that bugged me was, like, they have no notifications that say, like, they got a payment for the registration, they didn't get the smog certificate, and they just, that's it. They just drop it. It just seemed really weird to me. I was thinking, like, whenever, I mean, most of the time when I've worked on order processing systems, that may have happened for a little bit, and then we would have help desk calls, and we would trace what happened, and then we would add some kind of background sweeper process at some point that we would run reports and say, these orders got stuck in the system, or, you know, these are things that are waiting for further action, like some kind of workflow. But that didn't, they didn't have that. My stories are lame.
Oh, but had to cut my car story short, didn't you? Oh, damn, I thought my microphone was off.
Wait, was there more to your story?
No, actually there wasn't. Everything's been resolved now.
Oh, that's too bad.
But, you know,
it is.
If I would have known that there was this possibility, I could have just gone crazy on the roads.
That's right, because retroactively, they fixed everything for
you.
Well,
no. See, the problem is you were getting all the tickets.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
If the other person was getting the tickets, then yeah.
But what about in that short period of time when you knew you were going to go in and get this fixed? You could have gone crazy, you know, run lights, done all kinds, as long as they didn't get your picture. Mm-hmm. And then you go in and say, look, this isn't me. And they'd say, oh, we'll fix it for you.
It could have been interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. Really, the only other part of the story was that I did actually have to end up going into D.C. to a traffic court. And I'm sitting there with four other people who all claim they're innocent, but the judge gave them fines anyway. Yeah. But when I got up there, I just said, it wasn't my car. And I had pictures and a note from the Maryland DMV and everything, and I actually got off, so I celebrated. You know what bugs I think are great in software? I think date time bugs are great, like leap year bugs and things like that. Yep. There's a website out there that I ran across one time. It's called leapyearday.com. It's a website dedicated to people who were born on a leap day, so February 29th of a leap year. And you would not imagine some of the problems that these people have just trying to do everyday things, like get life insurance or get driver's licenses, and how many computer systems just tell them they're illegal or invalid. Or it's pretty funny. Pretty good read.
Wow. Yeah, just websites. Everybody just says that's an invalid date.
Right.
Too hard to figure. Another thing you'd pointed out before was the leap year thing with the Zune software.
The Zune-icide.
Zune-icide.
Oh, I forgot about that one.
That was in December 31st of 2008, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a leap second that year. There was something odd where it was like it doesn't happen all that often. Maybe it was just that, and so when it booted up, trying to remember, when the software booted up, it did something to parse the date, and the way it did its date parsing was with a loop, and because of how the loop was written, it was an endless loop. It would never exit out. Does that sound right?
Yes. And I remember it was an endless loop because the fix was just to let your Zune sit there and die.
Yeah.
Drain its battery.
And as now I'm remembering that it worked just fine the next day because it was January 1st, 2009, no problems there. And so, yeah, you'd let the Zune die and then start it back up the next day, and I believe it worked. So there was no software patch for it because, I mean, there was eventually a software patch to fix it for the next leap year or leap second or whatever it was, but there was no point in writing one that day because by the time it got out there, everyone just, it was the next day and it was all done. You gotta love bugs that just resolve themselves, which reminds me of another story. I totally didn't plan this one. There was this was day related. When I was in the Navy, I was the communications officer on a submarine, which meant basically I watched the radio men run around and work and tried to understand what they were doing. And one of the things that they had to deal with was cryptography. And at that time, it was paper tape with holes in it, which makes it sound like it was very long ago, but actually wasn't. And so anyhow, at the end of each day, they needed to shred the crypto tape, because otherwise somebody could historically find some crypto tape and run it against previous days' intercepted radio transmissions and figure out the crypto schemes. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So
that's something like Europeans would do, right?
I guess so. Yep. Yeah, it does sound like them. And so at the end of the day, the radio men would always shred the tape, and they needed to always do it. And it was just a chore, and they did it. And they did it when they were going off watch. So I get woken up in the middle of the night, and I was tired because we'd been up celebrating as much as you can celebrate on a submarine with no alcohol and you're underwater and there's nothing to do and no women. But we'd been celebrating crossing the international dateline, which meant that we, I believe, lost a day. And of course, the reason that comes up is because we crossed the dateline, the crypto tape. We had shredded the next day's crypto tape. So the radio man gets off watch. He's like, okay, let me check the date. He checks the date. It's the next day. He shreds it. And then we cross it, whatever it was. So we are going into the Western Pacific, and we had just shredded our crypto tape for the next day, which is a problem because the only way you do any communication is with crypto secured communications. So anyhow, our captain had gone on and on for the weeks before about how we were going to make a great impression on the admiral that ran the Western Pacific Fleet. We were going to do everything just right. So our first thing we're supposed to do is report in, say, we're here, we're this submarine, we're ready to kick ass, except we couldn't talk. And so the way they figured out that we had to do, they went and woke up the old radio man chief who'd been in since shortwave days or whatever, but we actually had to call in over shortwave radio to an Air Force base, and they patched us in over telephone line to the Navy base, and they arranged there's some procedure for this where they're like, shift to this other alternate crypto thing, and then we did that and we were able to talk. So I actually got a nickname out of it. They called me New Day Galloway, because everything was going to be fixed on the new day, and so we were like, we're going through all this stuff, but it's all going to sort itself out in the next 6 hours or whatever it was anyways. So it was like a race against time where they're like, maybe we'll get this thing worked out. But I was kind of like, yeah, if we don't, whatever. It'll sort itself out in 15 more minutes.
John, are you revealing some sort of national secrets here? Are we all going to get arrested?
Maybe. And, I can claim ignorance because I wasn't even born then.
They just sent you to juvie. We're all going up the river.
I was arguing with my friend the other day, and I'm like, look, man, you old people don't understand. I'm going to go play with my BMX bike. Or what do kids do these days? I guess BMX isn't cool.
I think they play with their Apple software.
It's probably true.
So was this a computer problem, or was this a wetware problem? This is a human error.
Well, it was a human error. It was all completely human error. I guess it was procedural. Yes. But it's an interesting story about dates. No, yeah. Fine.
Well, so should I... I don't know that it's a computer problem, but since we've been talking about governmental data problems, should I tell the story of when I was arrested by the Italian police?
No, thanks.
All right.
Okay, yes, please.
All right, this is like the one kind of crazy story of my life, I guess. So, you know how when you go to a hotel in Europe, you give them your passport? And one of the reasons that you do that is they cross-check that passport against... known criminals or whatever. They send it to the police department, and the police, checks it against their logs of known criminals or whatever. Anyway, so I was visiting Sicily with my parents, and we were sort of going from town to town, and we'd check into a hotel and give them your passport, and then a couple of days later we'd move on to the next town. And so we're 2/3 of the way through the trip around the island. We're basically going all the way around the island of Sicily, and check into our hotel. We crash for the night. Around 11:30 at night, I get a phone call from the front desk. saying that there's an Italian policeman down in the lobby who needs to talk to me. And I'm like, yeah, what? Say what? So I go down there and he speaks sort of broken English. And they tell me that I need to go down to the police station with them because there's some sort of problem. And I don't speak Italian, but my family's Italian and my dad was with me and he speaks Italian. So, they were able to get him and we went down to the police station.
Is he smacking you on the back of the head saying, what did you do? What did you do?
So we go down there and they put us in a room and they're talking and we're like wondering what the hell's going on. Finally, one of the policemen there comes and tells us that what happened was, so I was born in Italy, but emigrated to the United States when I was like 18 months old, so very young. But they had no record of my immigration. And so I had my name had been flagged as somebody who had not reported for mandatory military service. In other words, I was a draft dodger. And normally, you check into a town and they send your passport information to the police, and the police are so backlogged with stuff, they never actually get around to checking it, or they check it. By the time they check it, you've left, going to the next town. So this one night, apparently the police were on top of their stuff and, didn't have enough to do that night. And so they actually cross-checked my name against, the government records and got a hit. And so they came and found me.
Wow.
So you could, and it turns out in order to actually get this cleared before I could leave the country, I actually had to go to the government office in Milan and, have them fix it. Otherwise I wouldn't be allowed to fly out of the country. So we went there, we were going there anyway, so it wasn't like out of the way, but we went there, went to the office of the military. And, this was kind of fascinating. They, I told them my name and my year of birth, and they didn't go to their computers. They went to a row of books on a shelf and pulled down the book for 19, the year of my birth, and looked up my record. Wow. In the book. I have to assume that there was computers involved at some point, because, obviously they were not doing that for the cross checks of the, when I checked into the hotel. But, I guess you could say that's an example of computers working the way they're supposed to work, not a computer failure.
Wow. So there was no record that you had left the country then.
Exactly.
How should that have worked? That should have been, when you emigrate, they should have some
record of that.
Yeah.
Relieve me of my obligation to, serve in the military.
Right. Man. It's too easy bashing messed up government data. Like, everyone assumes it's screwed up. But that was...
Like, all the stories are usually kind of sad. I mean, yeah. So now they think you're 13, but then, I bet that at some point before you can actually get that fixed, they'll want to audit you from 1997 forward.
Right.
And then they'll assess all these penalties for things that because you were working when you were a minor and didn't pay taxes. Or something, or they'll fine your parents.
I was going to go after Scott Hanselman for child labor laws because
it's going to take forever to get it unscrewed. Your kids will be doing this as part of your estate plan. Just trying to prove that dad wasn't 13.
Oh man, I was thinking like
although Kevin getting arrested in Italy is pretty good.
That is pretty good. Well, I was thinking like. I've been reading all this stuff about like, oh, it's going to take this long to upgrade these computer systems. Like, oh, there's this cost on upgrading computer systems from Windows XP to Windows 7. And I'm thinking like, it's 2010. Like, really? And then I'm thinking as I was in the Social Security office and at the IRS office, like there's people there handling things that a lot of the time are because of like just crappy software or poorly managed data. And I'm thinking like, how much does all that cost compared with just, compared with fixing this stuff?
Well, the funniest thing is when they do finally upgrade all those computers to like Windows ME or something, mm-hmm. You'll come back and you'll think, this is going to be great because they've upgraded all these computers to a more modern operating system. And what you'll see is you'll see a giant DOS box where they've had to terminal, service in somewhere.
Yep.
and they're running Xterm or something on their Windows desktop to get to the same exact program they were running before, only in a much more convoluted and worse way.
Or the case where they do the it's a website, but it's they made them put everything in the same order, like you couldn't change how it all worked and the tabs have to all work because enough people expect the software to don't change anything, just update it.
But they won't actually use the tabs because they'll click in each individual text box to enter the new data.
Double click.
Yes.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
See, I haven't gotten the biggest pain I've had is I got a complimentary copy of Windows XP Home once, and I never had any cause to install it. So it literally sat on a shelf in my workshop for I don't know how many years, 3 or 4 or 5, 6 years. And then I finally decided to set up an old computer for the girls, and it's not going to be connected to anything except for the power outlet and the monitor. And so there's no need to upgrade it. All it has to do is run Reader Rabbit and things like that. So I install it, and then, you know, of course they've got the activation. So I have to put this thing on the internet to activate it, and it failed. And like, so it's, I actually had pulled shrink wrap off of this copy, installed it, and the activation failed. Like it said, this is not a genuine copy, or someone else is already using that number.
That's probably it. Everyone generated all those XP keys.
But, you know, it's not like they're 10 digits.
Yeah, that's true.
Or 5 digits or something. One of the odds that someone's going to generate that exact key, or, you know, they've come up with this.
Right.
That was kind of a pain. I had to call them up, and then they just did it.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, so what was the whole point of the activation if all I have to do is call up and someone will just activate it?
They're probably at that point going like XP Home, yeah, whatever.
Sure.
I had something. I one time had to call in and activate. I think I'd gone over my limit of changing the hardware or something. But they had me read it, you know, give them the activation number. And I bet some of that is they, you know, check something and said, oh, this is, I mean, I guess that's something that shows something. Like maybe that's something good was happening there. They were able to see, okay, here's what was used. Here's how it was activated. Or maybe it was flagged. Maybe it wouldn't activate online because it had been so long since it was issued. I don't know. But at least you didn't have to show up in person with a certified copy of your birth certificate. So there's that.
Don't give Microsoft any ideas.
Huh. Yeah, who's going to buy an Apple TV? John, are you going to buy an Apple TV?
I'm not. I mean, I've already got it.
John Group will.
Yeah. I'm set for TV stuff. I'm happy with them. I was ranting about Twitter about a lot of stuff today. I think I'm grumpy because I'm going through puberty. But I'm happy.
That explains why your voice keeps breaking.
But I am totally happy about the Apple TV, just because anything that puts any kind of pressure on the existing cable media distribution thing is good. Like I think Apple's what Apple did with iTunes and iPod kind of broke open digital distribution of music, and so I'm hoping that happens with TV and video as well. But the short answer to your question is no, I'm not going to buy an Apple TV. But Kevin will buy two, so it evens out.
Kevin, you're going to buy two?
I'm considering buying one. Not that long ago, I bought one of these Blu-ray players, these Samsung Blu-ray players that has Netflix on Netflix streaming built into it. And the Netflix streaming was one of the main reasons why I got it. And, you know, I upgraded our Netflix plan to Blu-ray, and I've been kind of, the whole Blu-ray thing has been kind of a turnoff for me, in large part because you pay a premium for these things, and they program the disc so that the first 10 minutes of the disc are these unskippable, horrible previews for other movies. If you watch the disc halfway, and then you stop and you resume, it doesn't remember where you were in the disc. And it's because of, I don't know, the explanation is it's some Blu-ray thing. And so like the Blu-ray user experience is actually much worse than the DVD Blu-ray user experience. So I would actually consider just sending this thing back and getting an Apple TV instead. The one thing that's kind of a killer for Apple TV for me is that it doesn't support a lot of the codecs that, the video codecs that stuff that I have, uses. So, you know, it doesn't support DivX or XVID or, you know, some of the other more common codecs. So that might be the thing that, is kind of a killer for me. But like a lot of people, I'm looking, you know, I've got a dish and I'm looking for a way to get rid of that because I pay more than I need and it does you know, it's 200 channels of which I watch five. So, you know, I think the potential is there. I think there was a couple misses on this particular unit, but I'm still pondering. But just as a Netflix streaming box, it looks really quite good.
I can't get into it. I looked at it and I if it was running, no, not even if it was running iOS apps, really would I care. Although I could see some aspects of that would be kind of cool, like being able to maybe control the game using your iPad or iPhone, but play it on your TV. That would be kind of cool through the iTV. I don't know. But so there's two things about it. One, it only has HDMI out. And for me, that means we got to buy a TV with HDMI in, which means we got to buy a whole new TV to work with this thing. So that kind of, yeah. And yeah, sure, that would be great. But we're also, you know, doing lots of remodeling and stuff. So right now, it's not a good time to buy any TV. But and I've got lots of like free TV shows or episodes and things like that I've downloaded through iTunes that I could watch on it. But then I look at the Roku player, and for $69.99, I get the same resolution if I was to go with. But it supports component out, both component and the what is it, the RGB? Is that called component? What's the video?
You're talking
the yellow video cord out.
Oh.
RCA
composite
versus the component out. Composite. That's what I'm thinking. So it would work with my, you know, my TV that I have now. Plus, in addition to Netflix streaming, it supports Amazon Video on Demand and download. So I could either rent a TV episode from iTunes for 99 cents, or I could, you know, maybe go buy the TV episode from Amazon for 99 cents, or, you know, I could buy the season and have it there, and I still get the Netflix streaming. And the $99 version of Roku actually supports 1080p output. So if you're a videophile and you have this HDTV, I don't know why Apple TV would make that much sense to you, unless you're one of the people that already has a Mac Mini with a bunch of iTunes stuff on it, or you've already ripped your Blu-ray DVD collection to, you know, sort of iPhone or iPad format. I don't know. I like the idea of being able to stream from iTunes from different machines. So that's more of a, it's kind of what the Xbox 360 has already done. So you could, you know, put all your media on a media server or another machine, install the connector, the blade, and Xbox 360, and stream all your media to there. And so again, I go back to who outside of the Apple faithful is really going to get an Apple TV?
I don't know.
It just feels like it's missing something. That's what a lot of these things from Apple kind of do. The first Apple TV kind of missed a lot of things. So does this.
So we've got just a computer set up in our house for our media, and I know that doesn't work for other people for other reasons, but it's nice to be able to, like you were saying, Scott, with the Amazon Video, like that works really well, and it streams immediately, and so I've liked Amazon for buying video as well as MP3s and stuff. And then another thing I really like is the kids can work VLC really well. And so we have it plays DVDs and it skips over all the introductory junk, and you can just skip chapters and go right to the thing. And like the start and stop is just the space bar. So even the 3-year-old knows to like slap the space bar to like stop a video from playing and stuff. So I don't know. I'm wondering if over time computers will ever become like using a computer as your media viewing thing will become standard in consumer homes, or if it's just too different of an experience. Like, I love being able to use the internet on there, and I think that the internet is becoming so much part of the video and media experience that I wonder if there's a distinction, you know, and maybe that means that set-top box kind of things get better browsers, or maybe it just means that people expect that their computers are going to be, you know, like when you use a TV, it's going to be a computer, because why wouldn't you want a computer on your TV? I don't know. Maybe that's...
See, I have no interest in having a computer on my TV. I think this is kind of the Apple perspective, that people don't really like computers in a lot of ways. You know, computers
what kind of people? What kind of people wouldn't like computers?
People who just want to watch a video on their TV, like, they don't, I don't really see people wanting to surf the web a lot. Obviously, Google disagrees, because that's like Google TV is taking that whole tact of, you know, sort of, you know, bringing the internet more to your computer.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really have that need. I have a little laptop if I want to, you know, use to surf the web. I don't really need to see it on my, I don't even really want to see YouTube videos on my TV, to be honest. That's a feature that my, you know, Blu-ray player has, and I don't ever use it. And, you know, the whole, you know, it's missing to something. Yeah, it probably is. But, you know, we're geeks and we want lots of features. But I don't know that everybody needs that.
For a while now, YouTube has been offering TV shows, like old TV shows and movies. And they just recently announced they're going to have actual movies on there for, I don't know if they're going to for rent or just for streaming. I was wondering if that changed your idea of using YouTube
Maybe it's just because I don't think of YouTube as offering those services, but not once have I ever watched anything more than a, 3-minute video clip of some cat doing something stupid.
What about a 2-hour 3D movie of a cat doing something stupid? 3D.
Maybe if it was 3D.
5.1.
Well, the movies that they're offering aren't, here's one, Extreme Chick Fights. Look Who's Talking To.
Soul.
I think some of that's even like the Netflix problem. Like I think that's this huge roadblock is like the distribution of how things go from, this process. Like if you want to watch current stuff, like current shows and newly released movies, it's like it's in the theater and then it's on DVDs and then it's released on cable and pay stations. And then it's like, And like Netflix never gets a lot of these movies, Netflix and Hulu and I'm sure YouTube, Amazon Video, like they have these great experiences, but the selection is tougher,
Yeah, clearly Netflix is betting that they will at some point get access to that stuff, but you're right, it's not there now. But it is great for catching up on TV shows. Like, a lot of these TV shows released on DVD, are available on Netflix Instant Streaming pretty quickly.
See, that's kind of what I'm thinking of in terms of ditching DirecTV. Maybe instead of seeing it right then, I wait until it's on DVD, then it'll be on Netflix and I can either get the DVD or I can stream it. It's kind of my thinking. The only part where that breaks down is we'd have to have DVDs on hand, or they have to have a really big selection of kids shows. Because I'm looking at my TiVo or my DVR, and like 80% of it is Disney, Nick Jr., and PBS kid. And so the rest of it, there's an occasional show that my wife or I might watch. Most of it is for the kids. So it's $80 a month, and I could probably get the entire first season of Scooby-Doo for $25.
Totally. And plus, the way kids watch TV, we had Media Center. We still have Media Center. We had the kids had all these kid shows recorded. We canceled cable like 4 months ago, maybe longer. And the kids have barely noticed because, we rent the movies and then they watch these reruns of their kid shows. And they've got like, years worth of episodes, and they've got favorites. They're perfectly happy. Oh, let's watch this one, and then we'll rent a movie once a week or so. They don't even know we canceled cable, which is, so there's that.
But so one of the things that I think is going to happen, and one of the reasons that I'm glad that Apple kind of went into this is this idea of TV shows a la carte, not just seasons, but individual episodes a la carte, is that maybe it'll finally wake up and shake up the Comcast and the DirecTV and force them to, scale back or, So instead of paying $80 or $90 or $120 or however much for 200 channels, of which you watch 5, maybe you'll be down to paying $20 a month for the 5 that you actually watch. Or maybe, being able to buy individual shows in the on-demand episodes and stuff like that instead of having to take the entire set of stuff you don't care about.
I know that was a concern that musicians had from going from CDs where they sold, 75 minutes with 17 songs. And, everyone said there'd be like 3 good ones usually on a CD. And now with MP3s, you just pay your $3 and buy the 3 songs, and maybe you'll listen and buy some other songs, but maybe you won't. And I think it's just kind of a little inevitable.
It's sad to say, but I actually think these businesses will run themselves into the ground before they have the foresight to change their business model. I mean, these companies, just like the big record labels, they just, they don't, they're too addicted to their current revenue stream.
Yeah. Well, it's just like Blockbuster. How long did they wait, and now they're trying to do online. They tried to do online.
Now they're filing Chapter 11 is what they're doing. Mm-hmm.
Nathan Bauer sent me a link today. Actually, he just quoted the collapse of complex business models. Easy for me to say. It's an article from Clay Shirky, and he's quoting this article, I don't know if it's a book or paper or something from 1988 called The Collapse of Complex civilizations.
These are big words for a 13-year-old. It's okay. We understand.
So, in the collapse of complex civilizations, he was talking about the Roman Empire and these other like really established civilizations that broke down. And the thesis was that it wasn't that they broke down in spite of them being, you know, complex, evolved civilizations, but they broke down under their own weight. They were too complex and they were unable to change. It's a really fascinating read. Yeah.
I think I think the main reason Rome collapsed was because they just kept installing crazy leaders who were running into the ground. But that's a whole different podcast.
Right, right. That we should have Kay Scott talk about some Roman general or something. But there's the idea is that things start out simple, they get more and more complex, and there's a marginal return on adding some more complexity. Like, for instance, in farming, you get some marginal return off of introducing mathematics or introducing engineering to your farming. And you get marginal returns about adding layers of government and about adding policies and practices and all these things. And then after a while, that marginal return gets less and less to the point where it imposes a negative value. And by the time that happens, everything's so ingrown and built around this complexity that it just people can't change. Like even if they wanted to, they can't. And so Clay's point in this was that these businesses, even if they wanted to evolve, they just are incapable of doing it. And so I'm don't know. I mean, I bet there's probably just a lot of things where people are looking short term at like, look, we're making this much revenue now and we're not going to change anything and reduce our revenue, even though it's shooting themselves in the foot. But there may be people within these businesses that see what's happening and they don't know. Like, how do you compete with YouTube videos that are made for free that millions and millions of people watch and would rather watch than your show that was, you know, that was written by unionized writers and goes through distribution systems and all this crazy stuff? That was what I read.
Right on. Clay's the man.
Speaking of complex business models, didn't Windows Phone 7 RTM today? Aren't they shipping it out to partners?
Yeah, that's what I read. I guess that means they're shipping the phones out. So that's, yes.
Pretty exciting, isn't it?
Woohoo. I love the announcement that says, hey, you know, you'll be able to buy this something in 3 months.
Yeah. But I guess everything does that.
Apple stuff is generally available when they announce it. Less in recent years, I have to say, but.
Yeah. They're working with one supplier. Maybe that makes it easier, you know, as opposed to going out through manufacturers, going through different suppliers and stuff. But everything I'm hearing and reading about from a developer point of view, it sounds like a cool phone. I mean, I know that was one thing they were going through. The whole development model sounds pretty decent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there's that.
I don't know.
Are you going to get a free employee? You know, does every employee get a Windows phone?
That's what I read. Yes.
Well, you'll have to give us the report then when you get it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, from everything I've seen, they look like the hardware is beautiful, that the screens are great, that the development process is nice. I like that the phone itself, like the development software runs an emulator that's not like kind of like the phone. I guess it actually runs a separate build of the exact software, just it's compiled for x86 instead of ARM. So, I mean, all that stuff sounds pretty neat. And then I love Silverlight as a development model. I mean, compared to any other phone development story, I think that's awesome. And then also XNA for games. And I'm not a gamer, but I know they announced something about Xbox stuff running Xbox Live and all that stuff running on the phones, which I guess is
good. Have you done any development for it, John?
I haven't.
Like playing around or anything?
That's
just so I know that the Silverlight kind of looks like a great way to do the development, but from what I've heard, it's just kind of a thin veneer on top of the old Windows Mobile API. Like it's Silverlight, but it's not Silverlight like you'd find with the CLR or the Core CLR and all that stuff. It's just different enough that, yeah, you're writing Silverlight and XAML and calling some familiar things, but there's also, it's kind of different under the hood.
So Scott Hanselman did a podcast with one of the guys from the team, Jeff Wilcox, I think. I forget the name. And they talked about it. They said it's a branch of Silverlight, but it's basically Silverlight 3+. So it doesn't have everything of Silverlight 4 because it was branched before Silverlight 4, but it has a lot of the features in Silverlight 4 plus, you know, phone stuff like that you're not going to have. But I think a lot of the big, most of the big things where I was like, I hope it has this. And I went and looked and it was like, yeah, it's got all that stuff. So do you know if there's anything specific?
No, not anything. Just because I had a hell of a time just trying to get the SDK and everything installed. So I haven't gotten to look at it much. So the big question is, what's the spread on the first service pack?
If I had to say, I would ship Service Pack 1 2 months after any Microsoft software releases just because there's enough goofballs that won't do anything. right. It was just a no-op.
two months. Just ship it as SP1. Like RTM.
Just go with it, right?
Exactly. The first thing you do, activate the phone, download the update.
I will say, and I don't know, I mean, I see a lot of positive stuff about Windows Phone 7 from Engadget, and so I don't know if at some point, you know, people write that off, but they were showing, you know, more recent releases of the phone, and everything was just really snappy. Everything seemed to be working really, really well in terms of responsiveness. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I guess it's in some ways it's a new release of something, but... I don't know. Why are you saying, why are you expecting a service pack?
Because it's got Windows in front of it. That's all.
Huh.
Should I make an antenna joke or I'll just pass?
Those are too easy.
My big question with WinPhone is how they're going to be able to upgrade the OS, or if they're going to be able to upgrade the OS.
Mm.
That's one thing that Apple did really well, and that even Android, it sounds like, has been struggling with. And, you know, forget, you know, Pocket PC, old Windows Mobile was freaking horrible at it. Are they field upgradable, basically?
My thoughts on Android with updates have been that the Android updates, and Kay Scott, you can tell me if your experience is different. The updates have been really, really smooth. The problem is more that the cell phone providers like Verizon will take a long time to release it. So, you know, the thing will be out there. I mean, it's an open source project. People download it and compile it and all that. It's out there, but then Verizon takes a long time because they're getting their random crapware, or, you know, Sprint or everybody else testing all their customizations to make sure everything works before they roll it out. I got fed up with waiting and just eventually I just rooted my phone and put Froyo on it, and it took a matter of minutes and everything was, you know, there was no problem.
Hmm. But that's not something most people are going to be doing.
True.
That's been my biggest disappointment. And I'm with T-Mobile. They came out with a newsletter 3 or 4 months ago that said, yes, we're going to update everyone to 2.1. And there's been nothing for my phone.
Yeah, my younger brother is always just kind of like installing random ROMs on his phone and stuff. And so he was like, dude, just do it. And I I installed OneClick root, and then I ran, what is it called? There's like this ROM manager, and like, you know, minutes later it was running Froyo. So, I mean, it was kind of a disappointment. I expected, you know, more like biting of nails and getting worried and stuff. So.
Oh, it didn't take too long. I'm going to end up doing that myself too. The only reason I've avoided it so far is because I didn't want to invest the half an hour and research how to do it. And then the 2 or 3 hours trying to get it to work, but it sounds like it's pretty smooth.
Yeah, I can send you my notes.
Now, that was actually something that came out this week in the blogs. There was, see if I can find it. There's a post about why OEM should use Windows Phone 7 instead of Android, even though it costs someone $15 for the license. Did you guys read this in the news at all?
No.
I'm not sure if that's the one I'm thinking of. Okay. I read something along those lines.
Well, the argument went that someone from inside of Microsoft said, yes, well, okay, so we charge you $15 more than what Google would charge you to put Windows on your hardware, but here's why you'll save money in the end. And to be honest, I didn't understand all the big words in the explanation about why this should work. And some of them I thought were complete red herrings, like, oh, there's lawsuits over Android IP. Well, you know, there can be lawsuits everywhere in today's world. But one of the points they made was that this thing is supposed to be easier to update than Android, which would mean it certainly must be easier than the previous Windows Mobile family of products.
My experience with the previous ones was it just didn't happen. Like, it was so it must have, I don't know if it was too much of a problem or whatever, but unless you went in and ran through all the crazy steps to you know, install a custom ROM, like, they just never updated them. Mm-hmm. And people would, you know, say, well, there's this sinister plan. The stores want you to buy a new phone. They don't want you to update the software on it. Mm-hmm. But I think now people, maybe because of iPhone, people expect you're going to get software updates.
Yep. And the other problem in the Android space is that it's been revving so fast. And here, my phone, I only bought it, what, seven or 8 months ago. And it already feels ancient. I'm running Android 1.6, and there's, you know, applications that I can't even run on my phone because it's not new enough.
Hmm.
So I'm just going to have to root it.
Yes. It's fun.
Cool.
So maybe I'll paste this back in earlier, but I looked up differences on Silverlight for the phone, how it compares with standard Silverlight. And so there's a few things in here. This is at silverlighthack.com, and this post was from March 16. So I can put this in the show notes, but they're saying there are some things related to, like, WCF channel factories and pixel shaders and stuff like that, which are in some reflection limitations. So, I mean, and then there are some things about Silverlight mobile applications are the only out-of-browser apps. So then the one other thing that I guess is kind of interesting is that Silverlight's development is C# only.
Huh.
So,
awesome.
Yeah. Although I've heard that people have hacked it to get VBSupport.
Yeah, and this is from March 16, so who knows exactly what's changed. Because I know a lot of the answers when people complain about things is like, yeah, fixed, it's already shipped, you know, whatever. But none of the things, I guess my point is, none of the things I read about was like, oh, it doesn't have that, game over.
Mm. So. And I've read that they're going to spend almost $500 million in marketing.
To which I say, as long as it's good, finally.
I hope they have, you know, like Jerry Seinfeld and Steve Ballmer shopping for shoes or something. That'd be great.
I actually loved those ads. I thought they were great. They should have at least had like a total finale, you know, like the last one. They're like, Jerry's like, yeah, you don't like our ads, screw you. Yeah.
They end up in jail together.
Yeah, yeah. Hmm. I mean, yeah. I hope they're good ads, of course, but like, I get bummed about like cool Microsoft products and things like that come out and then nobody ever hears about except geeks that follow the RSS feeds, you know, or randomly happen to download it off of MSDN or something. And then later someone else comes out with the exact same thing and they're like, this is awesome and new. And you go, yeah, well, they had it first. I don't know. For instance, I'm bummed that nobody even knows about Media Center. And I know it doesn't work for a lot of people or whatever, but I think it's awesome. And it, like, I will totally, I was talking earlier to Eric Hexter, and he was saying it sucked in 2004. And I agree. It was like crazy to get it set up. And I pulled a lot of very late nights getting all the drivers, everything perfectly lined up. And then I would like not touch a thing, you know? But like now it's like you just hook up a video, you know, you have a TV card, you hook it up and it's just like, oh, detected, boom, boom, boom. Everything works. And it's like recording TV. It's like, you know, DVR. And nobody knows about it, you know? That'd make a cool ad.
Yep.
I always thought that the concept of having like the central server that holds all your TV shows and then, you know, stream to these, whatever they call it, media center extenders, was mm-hmm. actually a cool idea. But it never seemed to go anywhere. And like Xbox was the only one and they had all kinds of crazy DRM crap with it. And it just kind of, it never seemed like they followed through with that.
Yeah, I hooked it up and it worked, but we only have like, we have one main area where everyone watches TV. And then if, you know, so we don't have a bunch of TVs, so I don't really know. I do know a lot of people that use it, but they're all software developers and they know about it because they are in the loop with Microsoft stuff. I think there are other media center, or there were at some point other media center extenders besides Xbox.
Yeah, I don't think there are anymore that support the newest stuff, like that support HD.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There was a whole bunch of DRM stuff around that.
Well, it's just that it's more that, you know, you go, you sign up for DirecTV or Comcast and they give you a DVR. And now you're supposed to go spend $200-$400 on this media center server that's going to sit there.
Well, see, we have this problem where
it's
we have this problem where we're like, we have one TV right now And, you know, we have the one DVR from Dish, but we want to get another TV for the house. Like, the moment you do that, it now you gotta get another DVR, or, you know, and pay for it, pay a monthly fee for it. And you can't just, like, you know, record on one TV, on one DVR, and watch it on another. So it kind of everything gets more complicated once you want to have multiple TVs. And this is one thing that AT&T actually, it's like the one compelling feature of the AT&T stuff is they have this multi-room DVR system. And, you know, the media center could have been that a couple years ago, but it just it never seemed to follow through in any reasonable way. Oh, and by the way, Apple TV does seem to be positioned to do that. Like,
yeah,
you can have it, you know, follow you from your iPad to Apple TV to whatever.
I wonder if you could set up two Apple TVs and have them stream between each other. Well, you still have to have a central machine to store your iTunes stuff if you want to buy anything.
Right, that could be your machine. It could just be any, you know, machine. And I can just hook up a $99 Apple TV to each TV, and you're good to go.
See, the other thing, too, is that all of those, they give you a box, but you actually pay. I think in most cases, you actually do pay for it every month. So, like, the set-top boxes, the DVRs, whatever, it's not free. And I don't know. I mean, you have to do the math to figure out how long it would take to pay itself back off. But in my case, I was at least able to convince my wife that it was a sound financial investment to pick up a, you know, $500 refurbished Dell and make that our media center and throw a terabyte drive in it. And it's got all the kids' DVDs. And, you know, I mean, it's got everything on there. Okay, so not all the kids.
That's why I'm kind of thinking that this Roku thing might work. Because I'm the only one that watches anything that I download from iTunes, because no one else uses it. I'm the only one with the iPod. I'm the only one with the computer with iTunes on it. They just, you know, of course, the 2-year-old just, you know, she's clueless. She just doesn't what's cool.
Stupid kids.
And the 5-year-old, you know, just has a TV, and she has a remote named Mommy and a remote named Daddy that turns it on for her. She doesn't really care how the cartoon gets on the show, gets on the screen, gets there. And $70 plus, you know, $9 a month for Netflix is compelling, whether you're using Media Center or anything else. Oh, first world problems.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, Scott, did you say what your media setup is?
No, I guess I don't do that much with media these days. I actually had a hacky Media Center kind of thing set up once, but it was kind of weird because it was with an Xbox as a media extender to a media PC, and the two could only talk over Wi-Fi, so things got a little bit choppy sometimes. So if it was something I really wanted to watch, I'd get like a 50-foot Cat 5 cable and connect the two. But I don't know. It was cool, but I just haven't been watching much TV or movies or anything.
One thing that, I mean, with that, and one thing that you guys were saying about, like, the Apple stuff being at least, like, thought through as a consumer product, like, I'm wishing that there were just more of these connections made in these products, like Home Server and Media Center on one machine would be really nice. And then this whole, like, Xbox extender thing works, but it's like, maybe it'd be better if, like, the Xbox software in some form would just run on it on your computer, you know, or maybe that an Xbox would run like a more full Media Center, and that could be your home. Like, so you get an add-on unit for your Xbox or something, and it runs like that's your TV.
That would be awesome. Like, if it could DVR things and stream from Netflix, all that.
Yeah,
that'd be good.
I know there's like everybody that I talk to that has these Media Center Xbox systems. Like, my younger brother had this, the same one that runs crazy ROMs on his phone, but he had this stuff set up where he was doing, what was it? He had Zune Wi-Fi syncing stuff, and, you know, like, I don't know. I don't remember enough of this to complete the sentence.
Yeah, I totally think Home Server as like the central, you know, DVR for the house would be fantastic. And I never really understood why they didn't take it in that direction.
My guess, just from listening to random podcasts about it, was that Home Server was built on some, like, Windows Server 2003 with all these customizations, like low-level customizations to it to support all the drive stuff that it does. Because it does this crazy RAID-type thing where you can throw any drive in it, and it does this mirroring and all this great stuff without requiring any RAID hardware. Mm. But so I'm just guessing that the customizations on that are enough that it, like, doesn't easily run this, you know, Vista or Windows 7 software.
Oh, interesting.
The total crazy random speculation on my part. I have nobody ever told me that. Great. Are we out of steam? Do we have more to talk about, Bueller?
Half-hour lightning round questions.
We started the lightning round an hour ago, didn't we?
Yeah.
Awesome. Media, I don't know. I just haven't been that excited about TV or anything. So
I've gotten less and less, which is partly why we canceled cable. It's like, I don't know. I mean, most things, I like to watch the series all at once. Like, I've totally gotten into the whole on-demand thing, and I got into that because of the DVR thing. But now I'm just like, I don't want to wait for every week. Oh, great, it's whatever night so I can watch the next thing. Like, I just want to get the series at the end of the series and watch them at my own leisure. And, like, my kids don't even know what a commercial is. And, you know, I'm just, like, totally moved from that kind of take what's on TV thing into, like, I will go out and get whatever I want to see when I want to see it, as long as it's provided by the evil media suits.
Well, that's kind of my thing. I don't feel a connection to any television events. I mean, you know, I don't need to be there for the premiere of Survivor or Grey's Anatomy or whatever's coming up. I'm like, yeah, just watch it later, you know, if I want to watch it. But the only thing that I really need an antenna for is sports. Like, I want to be able to watch some college football. I'll be able to watch some local football or basketball or whatever. Maybe that's just an excuse to go to the bar.
There you go.
When there's a game on that I want to watch.
And on that note, should we adjourn to the bar?
Yes.
Aye.
John, you could put in the Cheers theme song there.
All right.
We can use up the 30 seconds before we get sued.
Right. Okay. Cool. Thank you for joining us on Herding Code, and stick with us. We'll improve. and call in with your questions or comments about MonoDroid and other suggestions for awesome shows, and let us know what we should do for our 100th show, which is rapidly approaching.
No. Yeah, where are we?
Oh, this is like 92 or 93, somewhere around there. Isn't that crazy?
Wow.
We should actually have Queen Beatrix of the Netherlands on.
That would be the bomb. That would be so great. Or Queen Beatrix impersonator. I'm sure there's plenty of them out there. Like, how many people really are going to know?
I wouldn't.